everybody, and welcome to the IsCast number 23. It's been for a while now. So we got a very full table today. We got Ben, Wade, Sean, Lee, and myself, David. And we also have our special guest this month, Melissa.
Hello, everybody. Hello.
And Melissa's been helping us out a bunch, started with some of the Dawn Under Heaven work you've been doing. So want to say something about yourself? Introduce yourself to the huge audience that we command, the IsCast.
Yeah, my name is Melissa. I am a user experience designer. I've been helping on the Dawn project with some, you know, graphic design stuff in the beginning, and I've also been working as a, you know, costume coordinator and
quite brilliantly, I might add.
Yeah. Yes, indeed, very much so. Oh, cool, lovely, wonderful to have you on the podcast.
Wonderful to be here.
Thank you. So we got a bunch of topics. We got current events, a Dawn update, and we all saw Interstellar. Was that concise enough for you, Wade? That work?
Sure.
So I mean, this is like our fourth take at the start because I've apparently been awful.
So first we have Overwatch.
Ben, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, to talk about that.
Ben was really excited about this. I was sort of mad about
it. Yeah, so it's a new game. It's kind of styled like Team Fortress 2. I think it was
new game from who?
From Blizzard. You already said Blizzard. Yeah.
No, I didn't.
I think you did. Whatever. Anyway, so BlizzCon happened earlier this week, and so that's when they announced it. They also announced the new expansion pack for StarCraft 2. So Overwatch is, yeah, it's a Team Fortress 2 style game shooter, kind of comic-y. They had a cinematic that they released along with it. It looked awful Pixar-y.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys saw
the
character designs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, it looks kind of cool, comical, fun.
Yeah, it's some very interesting gameplay. They also tad onto the Blizzard thing. They also announced the Warcraft cast, which they finished filming in 2013.
I did not see that.
Oh, wait, where, a movie? They're going
to
do a movie.
Talk to me. Who's in this
they
movie?
They finished filming in 2013.
I heard like rumors, but like it was never.
How did nobody in here know that? I knew that. Good Lord.
Duncan Jones, the director. Yeah. But the dude from Vikings is the lead.
The lead in Vikings.
Do they yeah. say what role he'll be playing?
He's the I could look it up, but one of the I think the king, one of the kings.
Ooh,
I think it starts with the T.
I must figure this out right now.
Yeah, you can figure out while we keep talking.
Yeah,
I am so all over this.
So a lot of new stuff from Blizzard looks really good.
And this also being, I think it's like the first new IP in a while because it's been a lot of mainly just updates.
Which is
and
weird
because
I consider Hearthstone a new IP, but
yeah,
everybody seems to ignore that one.
No, well, I wouldn't consider that a new IP because it's just Warcraft IP. It's just a new game.
Yeah. I mean, it is. Yeah, it's a new game. It's a new style of game for Blizzard, but it's all the same characters that we've seen before.
Yeah,
I wasn't sure if it was or not.
Oh, yeah, okay. I don't think. So on IMDb, the cast is on here, but their role is not, except with the exception of Ben Foster, who's playing Medivh.
I saw it on Game Informer. They did a blog post.
Oh, let me look. What am I working Game Informer or something?
Oh.
All right.
For shame.
What was that yesterday? It was posted.
I don't know. I don't remember. Well, but
okay.
Or it might have been like IGN. But GTA though 5 coming out on the new next gen.
We should call it current gen now.
It is current gen.
Yeah, they're current gen at this point.
Or we can say 8th gen.
Or we can call it 8th gen too. That works.
PS4, Xbox One, and PC. But looks amazing. They introduced a new
first-person
gameplay mode.
Oh, yeah.
First-person shooter, which...
So freaking cool.
It made me excited. I didn't want to buy it, but now I do.
And I gotta say...
just because it's a whole different experience now.
The person that was in their little 3-minute teaser of that gameplay... is really good at driving. I don't know of many people that can go that long without
I'm sure it's all staged.
Oh, of course.
It might just be that you're bad at driving, David.
I'm fine at driving in that game. But one thing I really wanted to see, but you know, they didn't want to show it in that teaser, is I wanted to see him like wipe out or die. Like I wanted to see that crash and see what that was going to be like in first person. Like, are they just going to keep it with like the you know, so you're tumbling through the air and then you're just, you know, getting dizzy.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen anyone ride a motorcycle that good. In Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, see, I'm not alone in that.
Well, maybe it's because you're first person with the new camera angle, and like maybe it's easier to kind of control yourself and see what's coming up. Like there's less to take in because you're not so far out, so you're more focused on where you're going.
I could see that.
Would you buy it if it was the full $60 price?
I'm not sure. There's a Target has a deal where it's buy two, get one free, and I'm looking into see if I can get a third one, which would probably be like COD, and then a week later traded in.
Yeah. So guys, not to jump topics real, like going back to the Warcraft thing, just because I looked up the cast. First of all, I don't know why I didn't look this up before, but it's really cool. This is going to take place during the initial Warcraft game, so the initial encounter between humans and orcs. And we've got a lot of well-known Warcraft characters that are going to be in this movie. We got the original King Lane Rin of Stormwind. We've got Medivh, the sorcerer guy. I don't know what he is. Yeah, he's like a wizard, something like that. We've got Durotan, Doomhammer, Gul'dan, a lot of well-known Warcraft characters, and that's so cool. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, it's amazing how long they're spending on CG, because they wrapped in 2013 with filming. So some people are worried that because they have that long, like it's going to be too much CG.
Yeah, it's going to be like all of it.
But at the same time, or I hope that the CG that they are doing, they're focusing on it, making it really good.
Yeah.
So it is live action then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Well, which is so weird because obviously Blizzard has some of the best CG cinematics in the industry. And yeah, I get your point. Like maybe people will think, oh my God, it's 90% CG. Why don't they just do an all CG film and not have this weird hybrid? But
the director said he wants it. It's Avatar plus Lord of the Rings.
Oh, that'd be cool. Because Avatar was a lot of CG, but it was done effectively. Yeah. But anyway,
disagree.
Yeah,
but yeah, I'm really excited, and the cast looks awesome. So sorry to jump back.
Speaking of another ensemble thing, we got the Age of Ultron trailer dropped.
What is this? I'm not familiar.
Avengers.
Oh, it's right. Yep. I didn't see that.
Oh, okay.
You didn't watch the trailer?
Yeah.
No. I did not.
Actually, you were in the we were in the shop when we watched it.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot. Sorry. I guess it looked cool.
With the Pinocchio music.
It looked cool, but I guess it just didn't impact me enough to remember. I don't know. Yeah. But it looked okay.
I really like the Ultron, the bad dude, his voice, and with
James Spader.
Like the Pinocchio music they used, and
yeah,
it was just, I don't know.
It was really creepy to see the Iron Man suit kind of like mangled and zombie like.
Yeah,
and it would definitely be interesting because I'm not a comic book reader. I don't know a lot of the backstory and what they're drawing from, but you know, usually when something like this comes out, like a couple of different websites will make a post about. You know, what, like, basically, what is your background on these things? Like, what are they referencing and pulling from? And so I read a lot of those. I won't go into detail about what I've read because it would be potential spoilers for the movie. But there's some really interesting directions that could be going in. I'm curious to see what they're going to do with this movie to reconcile the next Captain America movie that will also lead into Avengers 3 and 4.
Yeah,
which should be interesting.
The next Captain America movie is Civil War.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is referenced to a storyline in the comics.
How does everybody feel about Marvel and DC like planning out to like 2020?
I feel like people may start to lose interest before 2020.
I think people can get burnt out. I don't know. I feel like it can be, we can get burnt out on these superhero movies. But I don't know.
Like, well, do you think like, you can get burnt out or an average person?
Well, am I not an average person?
No.
Oh, well, I don't know.
It's special. You're making a film, so you're not.
Well, It's tough because we've had so many superhero films in the last 15 years or so, and they seem to have been escalating, getting bigger and better and more of a spectacle as they go along. I mean, you're going to hit a ceiling eventually with what you can do with a superhero movie.
Yeah. So, well, and like, I know for me, like, even like by the time the first Avengers came out, I was already like sort of done with them. Like, because they'd been rebooting all the Spider-Mans and, you know, and all the X-Mens and, you know, all the Batman ones too. It's like, I didn't even see Avengers in theaters. I was, you know, and I don't, as you know, this Age of Ultron looks fun, but again, I don't even know if I'm going to see that one in theaters unless we see it for the podcast.
I don't feel like I need to see another Iron Man movie, but I could see, mm-hmm. I think there's so many movies you can do of a specific hero, but then you can move to the next hero.
So speaking of that, like with sequels and everything, they announced Toy Story 4, which isn't a superhero movie, right. But it's still like this, we seem to get into this rut of like we need this universe and explore it and keep making, building on it, which I think kind of comes from maybe people getting older from playing games and like how we want, you know, we want more Master Chief, we want more Halo, we want Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, so I'm kind of with you, Lee. The announcement of Toy Story 4 is kind of like
we're doing Star Wars now, like it's just it's more universe expanding, like it's
not, is Toy Story a rich universe? I don't know,
but I'm just saying like you're just doing more stories in the same context of yeah. certain characters and certain storylines.
I feel like everybody thought that way when Toy Story 3 was announced, though. Everyone mm-hmm. was like, 3? Really? What
okay, I get that point, but it wrapped up so well yeah. with the third one.
That's true.
Like, but what if it wrapped up really well okay. with the fourth one?
Like, Andy, like, Andy like has kids of his own, reclaims yeah. the toys, and like...
Yeah.
Okay, maybe, but it's like, at what point does it stop?
Well, I wonder
but that's
who is
my question.
Does it
need to stop?
So, like, the first Toy Story was geared towards kids, but I feel like the Toy Story 3 was geared towards the generation that grew up with the movies. Yeah. So I wonder what Toy Story 4 is going to be then. Is it going to be...
Could be, like, a reboot. Or, yeah. Like Star Wars. Like, they're going to try to retarget the younger crowd so they can keep selling toys and
I think they were trying to target the younger crowd with Jar Jar.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm saying, like, that's what it's about, though, is you got to... You know, there's a certain point where you got to... People get old and... There's new people now, and you got to
sure.
And the IP has been trusted, and it's people like it, so you do another one.
I guess I don't know. I think with storytelling as it's gone throughout the ages, IP only goes so far before like culturally it's not relevant anymore and has to be done in a different way. But I don't know. Superhero movies have been like Superman's been good about updating itself to the current times. You know, it's from like the 40s, so. Mm-hmm. It's had to improve itself over the years, so I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I think there's a certain time frame. You know, so many generations go by that.
Yeah,
it's okay. You want to see it updated. You want to see it fresh.
And though it's interesting when you're looking at that, can anyone think of any stuff that has not been refreshed? Just out of curiosity, I don't want to take too long.
You mean something
that has been that is considered such a classic. That it has not been redone, and I think more
Casablanca?
So like, well, like there's those kind of movies, but
Back
like,
to the Future,
yeah, or more like the sort of like the franchise things that would like they could have that longevity, but they mm-hmm. don't. Like
Back to the Future,
yeah, to the Future is a good one.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but you know, so many of them aren't. You know, Alien has spawned into all its sequels, and then Alien versus Predator, and blah blah blah, and. You know,
yeah,
and like Lord of the Rings, you know, that was done back in the 60s or whatever originally and then redone.
Yeah, I have a question around because we have another topic here is the Hobbit trailer. How long do you think it's going to be till they do another Lord of the Rings series?
Hopefully,
because that was
never.
Back in 2001. So,
yeah,
what's long enough?
I think the difficulty that they might have is doing another story that people can connect to in a way. Because people, one thing is, I think they like Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit because so many people have read those books mm-hmm. and they know the basis. But now if you're going to start going beyond those stories, you start to deal with stuff that's in the Silmarillion and that kind of stuff. And it's people that don't have as, like, now we're talking characters that people have any maybe referenced in one line mm-hmm.
well,
that there may not be as big a draw for from a box office studio making
yeah.
perspective.
I think the movie, the visual effects and the appearance has to get to a point where... It's kind of cringe worthy to like watch it, you know, like the original like King Kong with like
oh as far like, as
like puppeteers
as far
and
as
stuff.
Like where does it get like how old does it have to be before it can be
yeah
redone?
I think
yeah.
it's a good enough story and the way it was made mm-hmm. compared to something like Spider-Man that was
yeah.
like redone like six years later
yeah
yeah
where like Lord of the Rings I think can hold up to the test of time.
The Hulk reboot, that was perfect. It was cringe worthy right
yeah.
from the theaters, so
yeah, that's true.
No, I think that's a good point, Lee. When the visual effects and I guess the storytelling in general in a movie is just ineffective
it,
to the point.
Yeah, like, it goes against current culture,
yeah.
like standards. And
I think that, yeah, then it's definitely ripe for a reboot if it needs it. Sometimes the effects...
I was going to say, like, one that comes to my mind is 2001.
I
don't know if that will need a reboot for
that's
a long
so,
time, if ever, because it is just gorgeous. Like, they're models, so it looks so much realer than... Like I think the spaceships in 2001 look better than the spaceship in Prometheus, you know, or even the spaceship in Alien looks better than the spaceship in Prometheus. I watched both those movies back to back.
Sure.
Yeah,
and
I would agree
it was
with
a
that.
Huge difference.
Well, there's some movies that you really can't reboot and expect the same cultural relevance. I mean, if it affects a culture to watch a movie in a certain way that like comes out of nowhere, like 2001 is like this big
mm-hmm.
spectacle. You can't remake it and expect the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do something different.
Well, it's like a. We'll talk about Interstellar later, but like that topic of the movie is relevant to now.
Yeah.
But if the society gets to a point where we're like self-sustaining and like it's not an issue and people watch that, they're like, oh, what?
Yeah.
Why is this such a big deal? Like,
Yeah, and I know I've had discussions.
We're not running out of food.
Right.
Yeah, I know I've had also discussions of with older content, like, for example, for Shakespeare. Is Shakespeare good? Is it still good? Like, is it good because it is still truly good? Or is it good because it has been good for a long time and we're just perpetuating that idea that it's still good and it is still incredibly culturally relevant? And that can be said with, you know, almost anything. Like, is Citizen Kane still good nowadays, or does nowadays people not care about it? So does it, is it no longer good?
I think you know the answer to that.
I think with those movies or those stories, though, those talk about like the human condition, or like very,
yeah,
those will be relevant as long as humanity exists or doesn't radically change from now.
And then the other real thing we'll touch on real quick is they've just received a tweet from Disney that Star Wars Episode 7 principal photography has just wrapped.
And their title's released.
Yep, and the title's released, which is The Force Awakens. So where has it been sleeping all this time?
Has it been napping?
It reminds me of, it just sounds like The Force Unleashed to me.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I guess, I don't know, I'll reserve judgment. For the time, it seems a little uninspired.
And one thing that I think is interesting is the actor who is C-3PO, what's his name?
Peter something something. Yeah, I saw his tweet, though. I know you're talking about.
Yeah, he said, basically, like, I know everyone said that, like, there's no better sequel than The Empire Strikes Back, but we'll have them eating their words on this one. So yeah. That's a very, very bold statement.
Yeah, basically saying, this one's going to be awesome, so get ready. Which I think is kind of cool.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
And speaking of awesome things to get ready for.
We're halfway through. We're moving on.
Yep, halfway through principal photography now, yes, for Dawn Under Heaven, so after 4 years.
Last episode, we talked about how we were just getting ready to start shooting. I think it was in like 2 weeks from the episode or something. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. We had just finished the read.
So what we had to do is push production back a week because of delays in armor building and all that. So we started filming 2 weekends ago.
Yep.
We've got 2 weekends in the can, and we're shooting tomorrow for our final outdoor day, which is great because tomorrow is the last day that is going to be above freezing for the high. After that, it takes a dive into the 20s, and I don't know if we'll get back to above that. So we'll make do. It'll be cold, but it'll be relatively warm compared to what we're going to see after that. And then after we finish outdoor shooting, we do interior studio stuff at Cinequipped.
Yeah, so we got a lot of sets. We just picked up the drop pod.
Yes.
That has been sitting in your...
From my parents' house. Yeah,
yeah, for 4 years now. Because I think the last time the public really saw that was in the Power of Halo video you did.
Oh, yeah.
But 3 years ago now or something.
Yeah. So it's been in storage. And I'm excited to touch it up, make it look pretty, and do some awesome filming with it in the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah. How's it been going?
Oh, yeah. So, Lee, I feel bad because you've only been on set one day. You haven't seen the magic. Well,
get the Facebook pictures.
Yeah, yeah. So we shot in a gravel pit, a quarry, a field, and I guess back in the gravel pit. So three locations so far we've been to. We're going back to that gravel pit again tomorrow. Wait, hold on. How many? What am I missing? No, Hudson.
Hudson. Yeah,
yeah, so four locations. And our goal with that was to basically find places that looked interesting but were away from the city.
Yeah.
And so that was the challenge. We found a pretty good looking forest. It was tough because we wanted to shoot with more leaves on the trees. I think if we would have shot our original shooting weekend, we would have got a lot more.
Yeah.
But we made do. I think it still looked really good. It looks similar to at the end of the Fellowship of the Ring when Boromir is trying to get the ring from Frodo. You know that look of the forest?
Yeah,
it looks just
in that too.
It looks just like that, which I think looks really cool. And it kind of goes thematically with that point of the film when leaves are fallen and things are dying and it's kind of bleak. So we shot there the first day. The second day was in the gravel pit. And the weather's been pretty good so far. It hasn't been raining. It also has been very sunny, which isn't good. Right now it's kind of like a light overcast, which would be, I think, ideal. But all things considered, the weather's been really good. The last Sunday was in the quarry, which was the big outdoor shoot. And that was in Elk River. Sean got us that location. I think we talked about it last episode. So that was a long shoot. The only thing that I'm worried about is obviously the pictures look really cool. And I want the shots to look even cooler. But we were very limited on time because we had so much to get through. So
Yeah, one thing, you know, I think a lot of people, when they think about film, and they're like, oh yeah, you go out there and you film and it's super fast and easy and whatnot. But like, you know, to set up, like, you know, we spent, I think, 45 minutes or something when we were at the quarry just blocking out that scene. And to figure out, well, where are people going to go, you know, talking with Sean from the military aspect, how are they moving, how are they getting from A to B, and all that stuff. And, you know, it is a slow process. Like, you know, there's a reason that, you know, shoot days on film sets, like union shoot days, are 12 hours long. And yes, you've got about 8 of those hours is nothing but filming.
And it depends how you film. We're doing a very traditional method where we have big lenses, matte boxes, flags and C stands and everything crazy. Yeah. We're not doing guerrilla style shooting.
No,
like what you see.
And a lot of people, like, nowadays, that's what they see. They see people like Corridor Digital and Freddie W at times. Like, they sort of, like, they're running to a location, and, you know, they're shooting real quick, and, you know, it's a really stripped down rig, and, you know, some people could look at and like, oh, why do you have a matte box on there? That's, like, stupid. Why, you know, that's just wasting time and wasting, you know, space and weight to add that on there. But, you know, especially working at Cinequipped and looking at all this gear, that matte box is huge. Like, there's a reason why people use it. You know, the fact we can put in filters and we put in NDs.
And polarizers too.
You know, flagging the light is really, really important. And nowadays, I think people sort of gloss over that importance.
Yeah, and a big portion of the production, I think one of the reasons, if not the reason, why people are looking at our project is because of the armor that we built. And I wanted to talk a little bit about Melissa's work with that, because she's helped out a lot with that. So, what have you done so far?
So far, I've helped distress trooper shoulders. I've distressed and painted a lot of the ODST armor.
The ARs too.
The ARs, yep, as well, and as well as the visor for the captain, the one that was sprayed to be polarized.
Yep.
I did that. And I painted the decals on the ODST armor.
A lot of little things, like you, like the padding in the helmets. It's basically, there was a million and one little things we had to do to get the armor ready, assembling and the straps and the gluing. Like, there's just so many things, so many little things that had to be done, and you basically just, like, pounded them out one at a time. And it's tough because, like, in our shop, obviously we have all these things we want to do. We didn't have, like, a list or a hierarchy way of organizing it. It was just like, okay, what can we do now? So it was all very chaotic, but you helped out with that a lot. And on set as well, talk about what you do on set with the cast.
So on set, I handle sort of getting everybody ready in the morning, making sure their costumes are all on in the right way and the buckles are all there.
Yep.
And fixes as they need, because stuff falls off as they're moving around. And, you know, it's just a lot of dealing with things as it comes up.
Being right there, ready to go.
With whatever they need to fix
super glue
at the time. Yeah, lots of super glue, lots of hot glue, lots of tape, gaff tape, all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the very first day we were shooting, the thigh pieces came undone. Yeah. I think it was, the hot glue came off, so we had to gaff tape them to the belts.
Almost every single thigh piece had to be individually gaff taped as it fell off.
Yeah. A lot of stress.
Because somebody put a little bead of hot glue.
Oh, don't look at me. I didn't do that.
Well, who did?
I won't call out who did that.
It's Wade.
But
I'll call him out.
No.
I put on a lot of hot glue.
we won't call that person out. With that, then that evening, we were out. That was a crazy one, because on that day we were up until 5:30 Saturday morning to finish the stuff. And we had to be on the road and moving at, I think, like 9:30 or something.
Yeah, something like that.
And so we did all that filming, and then at the end of the first day, I had taken all the belts home, and then I hand sewed them here at home. And even then, some of those broke off again.
Yeah.
Needed to be restitched.
And looking back on it now, it is unfortunate we did push production back a week, but I don't think it would have been possible to do it as scheduled.
There was a lot to do.
We worked like every day that week.
Yeah, and like long days too. Like, we were going from basically 6 o'clock, or like 6 o'clock to midnight, or is it to one? Or two on many of the days.
But it's been going great so far.
When are you looking to... What's the last day of shooting right now?
That'd be December 7th.
Yeah, so we take the Thanksgiving weekend off. So the next two weekends we'll be doing... So tomorrow, location. The weekend after that is going to be a full weekend of...
In studio.
Of studio.
Yep.
Or, so I'm sorry, the two weekends after that.
Yep.
And then the final one is, the first weekend of December. And then we will be wrapped. Hopefully not too many people.
We are wrapped for principal. And another thing, we're wrapping principal, but you know, obviously post-production work then ramps up, but then even after that, there's other stuff that will need to be recorded. Like we need to do ADR stuff potentially for, you know, like for some of the characters where like, we're just going to set up separate audio days when we just record them doing their lines.
I'm kind of afraid. I'm kind of afraid to show you and Bryce some of the footage because of the visual effects that have to be done. So we'll get to that when we come to it.
Yeah, it should be interesting. Yeah, and then we get to swing into full gear of post. But yeah, it's going to be really nice to get this project filmed and down, you know, filmed in 4K.
Yes.
We'll be filming in 4K.
Beautiful 4K.
Yep. Yeah, we're going to have actually gonna have quite a few different formats potentially for this camera being right. filmed on.
So the Red One and the Red Epic, are those two different formats? Are they just Red Code RAW?
They're just Red Code RAW. So okay. We'd be shot on Red and then shot on Blackmagic.
And potentially shot on Kodak/Fujifilm.
Yep.
We'll see.
We'll see. We'll keep, we won't say any more on that.
So we'll keep everyone updated. Obviously, we post most of the stuff to the Don page, but we'll kind of mirror with Intersection stuff too.
Yeah.
And that's going on with us, and it's exciting and awesome and great.
And then speaking of film.
Yes, we took a break from our stressful production schedule to see one last night.
On film, which was Interstellar, which is very excited to see.
Yes.
And and that one we made the point, though, because you can see it at a lot of theaters, but
digitally,
or even some theaters on film, on 35 film, they do have that print. But we made the point to go to the IMAX theater at the Minnesota Zoo so that we could see it on 70mm IMAX film.
In the spirit of Christopher Nolan, who believes in film.
Yep, and who paid for the film prints, allegedly, and the film prints are potentially like $50,000 apiece.
And for the first time did handheld IMAX shots.
Which is insane.
Yeah, those are see those pictures.
Those are big cameras.
The DP with the thing on his shoulder.
That rig is.
It's like it's probably like 45 pounds or 50 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the reel itself for Interstellar, the film print, the IMAX film print, weighs about 600 pounds.
So guys, obviously the trailer does a great job of showing not too much of the film, just enough to get you enticed, but really nothing beyond, you know, the premise. So and because of that, it's really hard to talk about it without going into things that could be considered spoilers. So I think maybe we can just talk a little bit about what wouldn't be spoilers. And then maybe take like 5 minutes. We can say skip 5 minutes ahead and then talk about some spoiler stuff. Is that
okay?
That sounds good.
Okay.
Or do we want to first do the, since the spoiler thing, do the projector thing, what you guys got to do after the film?
Oh, yeah. Would you want to talk about the projector real quick?
Sure.
Or I can talk about it.
Because then people that aren't going to do the spoilers, they can just...
Sure.
Leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leave. Get out of here.
Yeah. So one thing, as may be evident now on the podcast and clearly evident to everyone here, is I'm a huge film nerd and for that kind of technology and everything. And so I made
celluloid film, not just movies.
Celluloid film. And so when we were there, completely shot in the dark. When we went in, I noticed there was a manager was greeting people at the door, and I went up to the manager and said, "Hey, you know, I understand if you can't, but if at all possible, I was wondering if I could go up to the projection booth, see the projector in the film." And he's like, "Yeah, here, go talk to somebody afterwards, and they'll probably be able to let you in." And I was really excited about it. So afterwards, we did that, and we got to go up and see an IMAX projector, and then the Interstellar film reel, which was incredible.
Giant. It was 6 feet in diameter.
Yep.
It's freaking huge.
Yep. Yeah, and it's big stock. And then, you know, they have both the IMAX digital projector and then they have the IMAX film projector, which they kept specifically for Interstellar.
Right.
And, you know, that's probably... The guy said it was like $500,000 projector. In my personal opinion, I think he's lowballing that. I think it's probably a bit more. I think that might be $1 million projector.
Probably, yeah. It's huge.
Yep, it's gargantuan. It's probably like 4 refrigerators strapped together, about that size, I would say.
Yeah, the whole room it was crazy. They had humidity being pumped in for the film, so it wouldn't like dry and crack, and it was just like,
it wouldn't stick to itself. Yeah,
yeah.
And it's incredible that they're still able to do that. And you know, and one of the big things with Interstellar is, if you were projecting in film, you got to open 2 days early. So that made a ton of theaters really, really mad. Because,
well, screw them.
Yeah, well, because they're like, you know, everyone's up in arms because, like, you know, there's these theaters that have just spent, you know, millions of dollars to upgrade from film to digital projection. And then, you know, Chris
upgrade?
Nolan.
Upgrade? Side grade.
Side grade.
Side grade.
And then, you know, Chris Nolan comes along and is like, yeah, no, we're going to be releasing this one on film. So if you still got it, you get to open 2 days early. That's
okay.
So yeah. It made a lot of people angry. But yeah, it was really cool. And I even got two clips of 70 millimeter IMAX film stock to take home, which I need to frame that up with my other film.
So, let's talk about this movie. I thought it was pretty freaking awesome. Obviously it's a very dense movie. There's a lot to unpack.
And it also say
Well, just hold on. I was going to say, it's hard to, like, credits roll, walk out of the theater, and just be like, and have, like, a conviction about it. Like, you really got to just let it kind of sink in. Yeah. Because there's so much interpreting you have to do when you watch this film.
And with it, you know, some people may look at it and think that it's going to be, like, a science fiction action film. But it's really, it's a space opera. So it's, you know, it's like 2001. Yeah. It's not about, like, there, and, you know, there is action-y moments, is what I'll call them. But, you know, it's really, you know, it's about the story and about the characters and about the journey of it more than about having action.
And we can get into the parallels with 2001, but I wonder your guys' thoughts.
Yeah. I thought it was amazing. This has probably broken my way into at least my top 10.
Wow.
Favorite films, at least. We'll see how I feel later.
I really enjoyed it just as much as everybody else did. Acting was brilliant. Everything. Yeah. Everywhere.
But yeah, I'm with you, man. The Matthew McConaughey's performance, I thought, was probably his best I've ever seen.
I thought the 10-year-old girl did a fantastic job too.
Yeah, she good. She did really well.
Or the daughter, Murph.
Yeah. I love seeing original stories. And the fact that Christopher Nolan does that, he and his brother write all of his movies. I love that they're just original. It's great.
Yes, and one thing you see a lot in this movie is kind of visual tricks and just how shots are set up that you don't see in other movies. A lot of times, you know, especially blockbusters, they'll just copy what other movies have done visually. I mean, you see it in a lot of Michael Bay films. He has his tropes where he'll have like low angle shot of a guy getting out of a car with the sunlight on him or something like that. Christopher Nolan puts together shots that are so beautiful that you've never seen before. And the example that I told David earlier was when the spaceship is coming up to Saturn and you can see the planet and then you really zoom in and the huge planet and this tiny little dot going across the screen. Yeah. That shot was amazing.
Yeah. And before you get any further, let's go around the table and get other people's thoughts. Sorry. Melissa?
Well, hey, jump in. Feel free to jump in.
We'd really liked it.
Everyone jump in.
No, I really loved it. I feel like it's rare that a movie... sorry, I'm not used to speaking into a microphone like this, so I'm getting
touch your lips on the handkerchief.
Oh, getting intimate with the microphone. There you go. Okay.
That's my handkerchief.
I feel like it's really rare that a movie will like leave me breathless at moments, and there were certain shots in that movie where I couldn't breathe for like 3 seconds after it happened. It was just so breathtaking. I mean, that's just the way to describe it.
I definitely agree.
There's definitely a couple scenes where I had to let my breath out afterwards. I didn't realize I was holding my breath until after the scene was done. Like,
and I noticed one thing for me is, you know, I would be clenching my fists, you know, tense, but I'd say relatively relaxed in films, like even really intense things, you know, I sort of just, I don't get caught up in it a lot, though this movie did have me do that. But I saw Wade, because I was sitting next to him, at times I would see like, he'd just start leaning forward more and leaning forward, and like every once in a while he would remember, I would see like this moment of like, oh wait, I need to sit back in my chair a little more, because if I go any more forward, I'm going to fall off, so he had to like scooch back, literally, and then he'd just start moving forward again.
Literally edge of my seat. Sean, what'd you think?
Yeah, I love the film. I was so saturated in the environment. I felt like I was part of the crew and part of the story. I just very, very immersed in Interstellar, and the character development, I thought it was really, really cool how they portrayed each person. I don't know.
Yeah.
I loved it, especially the Taurus. Very, very neat.
Yes, and we'll definitely get into that.
Yeah.
I would love to, but real quickly.
No, I really enjoyed it. It was a great break from the normal superhero movies.
Yes.
It was
really
differently filmed compared to his other works, as far as like Batman and Inception, which is great to see as an artist, to like be able to, you know, like you say, like Michael Bay, like he has this formula.
Yeah.
Even people like Wes Anderson, or like you just watch a film and you know it's them.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
this, it's the way it started, and basically the first half of the movie, like it was very strange for me, and it caught me off guard a little bit. But then it slowly like worked in and got and kind of got going and kind of pulled me in later.
Yeah.
But in the beginning I was a little like, oh, what's going on? What is this? Because they went through so much material in the beginning and it kind of like,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it needed to be that long for what he was trying to portray.
Yeah.
But I think the beginning was, a little slow.
Yeah. First. They did take a slow setup and which I think not explicitly, but kind of has the same, emotional pacing as probably like 2001. 2001 starts very slowly.
Yeah. Really, really slow.
Very strange.
Yeah. Well, no, yes. 2001 is obviously much more strange than this movie. But there are so many parallels, which I feel like could be its own podcast
episode. Yeah, really good. And you know, I don't know if we're going to start getting into spoilers in a moment.
Not quite yet.
But for people who are watching, if you have the ability to go and see it in IMAX, you know, I would recommend IMAX film. But if you're going to, you know, at least do a digitally IMAX, I think that will be, because one thing I loved about it was, you know, the fact that the screen was so huge. And, you know, getting, again, the shot you were talking about, Wade, of how big Saturn was and then the little speck that was the Endurance coming across. And I think, like, seeing it on a screen that big was also really powerful.
Definitely.
Did you notice the aspect ratio changing? Or the
yes.
Firebox? Yeah, the beginning.
So what that was is, which I didn't even really realize, and I think Wade was the same way, I didn't realize that IMAX is actually a 4:3. It's square.
Yeah, it's very square.
And so when it was going to the narrower one, that is actually 35. Films. So we've been filming in 35mm for those sections. And I gotta say, for the most part, it didn't bother me. There were a few things when, like, they were doing, like, shot reverse shot, shot counter shot things, where it would be going to, like, one person that was inside the ship, and it would be 35, and then outside it was IMAX. And when it was going that fast back and forth, and it was just going, you know, full letterbox, like that, it kind of bothered me a little bit there, but again, it you know, I've sort of got over it.
I couldn't tell if it was some sort of artistic choice, like he was trying to get something.
I think there were certain scenes shot with an IMAX camera, so you'd only see that transition between the two in an IMAX theater. I don't think you would see that in a regular theater.
I really think that if Christopher Nolan had the ability to shoot the entire thing IMAX, he would have, but it's just hard to maneuver into some tight spaces that you really can't do it.
Yeah.
But, I guess before I forget, I did want to talk about the 2001 stuff just because, well, I don't know, because there's a lot of, like, spoiler stuff that, you know, we could get into.
Maybe what we can say is there are many parallels you could see with this in 2001 in the way it's shot.
And the music.
And the music is a big one. You know, I thought the music, I love the music for it. I was really annoyed. I got back last night. I'm like, I need to get the soundtrack now, and it's not going to be out till the 18th.
Hans Zimmer and Christopher Nolan were together kind of moving into an experimental space. Well, Hans Zimmer was definitely doing some new stuff.
The film actually started with the music. Chris Nolan, he wrote a letter to Hans Zimmer.
Mm.
It was like, I think it was like portrayed from like, the father to the daughter or something like that.
Okay.
And he said, read this, write something based on that. And he did, and he loved it, and it kind of went from there.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's so cool.
But yeah, you can see other things with this in 2001. As I said, how it's shot, it can be very similar. The, you know, long shots, the sort of the slow moviness, the vastness of space.
Yeah.
And then I could say thematically, you'll also see some parallels as well, but I won't say any more on that right now.
Should we get into spoilers?
I guess just real quick, we didn't actually talk about what the movie's about. So, what time period was it supposed to be?
This what I would say would be the near future. So I would sort of say this is probably would be something that occurred within the next 50 to 75 years.
Okay.
I'd say, and so basically the whole thing is a disease that they only refer to as the blight. Has come across the world and has started affecting crops, and it began on wheat.
Took out the wheat, yeah.
Yeah, it took out the wheat, and so they're in a situation where, you know, the world is sort of starving.
Yeah.
It's destroying all these crops, and, you know, corn is one of the few crops left that can grow. And then, so Matthew McConaughey's character is, and this is all from the trailer.
And there's also some kind of climate change stuff in there too. Like they have huge dust storms that come through.
Yeah, so it's sort of like a perpetual.
There's no crops to hold on the.
Yeah. Door. Yep, yeah,
so
true.
It's sort of like The Grapes of Wrath meets 2001 meets Inception. Sort
yeah.
of occurred to that sort of mix. Little
there.
and so Matthew McConaughey's character is recruited to go on this mission through a wormhole that is discovered to go and try and find a new planet.
Yep.
And so that's the synopsis.
Essentially the premise, and that is explained in the trailer, which oddly enough, I think while explaining what happens initially, doesn't give away too much at all.
Yeah, Chris Nolan has some of the best trailers. for not giving away a whole lot.
Yeah.
I was worried that I'd give away too much, but after watching the movie, the trailer, I guess, didn't give away a whole lot, which I liked.
Yeah, and it's so funny. The trailer for Inception, I don't know if you guys remember that, but the trailer has really not a whole lot to do with the movie. They set up the trailer in Inception like Leonardo DiCaprio is going in to steal information. Like, that's the whole movie.
Yeah.
Mm. And that's not it at all, but no. Whatever.
Well, it's a good one. I think at its core, it showed...
Yeah, they showed like the look and feel, but still, like,
as far as the daughter,
they cut his voiceover in a way. Oh, we're talking Interstellar.
That's what we're talking about, right?
I was talking Inception.
Yeah, okay, you're talking about the Inception.
You guys weren't listening to me. Fine, whatever.
No, I thought you were just saying it was similar to.
No. Let me just say it again. The trailer for Inception, they cut it together in a way that has like very little to do with what the actual movie was about. They cut up Leo's voiceover to say like, you go in and steal information. They call it Inception, and I'm the best, or something. Mm-hmm. It's really bizarre.
Yeah.
But, no, that's the premise of the film, and they have a lot of cool sci-fi elements, such as Taurus.
Tars.
So, Tars. Wait, are we making
is it
the transition?
Tars or Taurus?
We can.
T-A-R-S.
Yeah, why don't we make the transition? Yeah,
because we're doing spoilers now.
Okay, so skip ahead 5 minutes. 5 minutes on the clock, and go. Taurus. Badass motherfucking robot.
Taurus and the other one, which was...
Case,
that's yeah. Thank you. I couldn't remember.
There was a third one too that was dead.
Yeah, that was. I don't remember that one.
Which is funny, like how they, with the voices, you know, being very human, they had a lot of like programmed like,
what's
humor.
Your humor setting at right
I
now?
Thought
honesty.
That was so clever.
Yeah,
that
so like you really cared about them, and the actual characters in the movie like would brought that up too, like, oh, you're just gonna leave them, like, and then they kept having to remind themselves like. Well, yeah, I can just, they're robots.
Yeah.
So I can tell them to sacrifice themselves.
And they act human, but he's like, oh, yeah, no, I'm sacrificing myself. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's
he's like, you do realize you don't have to act.
And then real quick, I know we were talking about in the car, the design of the robot is actually a brilliant design.
No, when you
for
see
how
it,
to make them
the
move.
Way that it looked.
Yeah.
When you and see it in the trailer, awesome. You're like, wow, that can't be practical. But as the movie goes on, you're like, how it moves and shifts, it's like, wow, it can do whatever.
Yeah. And like,
whatever
yeah.
It needs
there's a big,
to.
There's a scene when, and I think you may see it briefly in one of the trailers, but one of the robots, I think it's Tars, has to go out and get Anne Hathaway's character, who's, you know, further away in this shallow ocean. And the one guy's like, hey, you know, Tars, go get her. And I was like, so he's gonna like shuffle step all the way down.
Yeah.
What is this? And you know, then he shifts into like this rolling motion. It's like, and my head partially exploded. And there's like, that's totally how we should be making robots. Like, why are we doing this?
But okay, so robot was awesome. Anything else spoilery we want to talk about? I'm
Matt
sure there's a lot.
Damon.
Dude.
I was.
Oh Matt, yeah, Matt fucking Damon.
That was a big surprise. I did not know. Because also, like, I haven't looked on IMDb, so I bet if you look there, you would probably see him on there. But yeah, like, you know, he's not in any of the trailers. Like, you would not know.
Didn't
and I didn't know
coming.
He was going to be in there.
He was pretty good.
I'll go with the parts that I didn't like. The one was when the first planet. What's the guy's character? The one that dies first.
Oh, I don't remember.
Doyle?
Miller?
Yeah.
Miller.
No,
yeah.
Miller. I don't remember.
No, yeah.
Anyways, but he
wasn't
like...
there for very long.
There's like three different takes of him like standing, going to get in. Then he looks at the wave, cuts to somebody else, go back to him. He like looks at the wave again. Like, oh shit, it's
at
coming.
At first I thought he made it in.
There was so much time from how they edited it that he could have got in, it seemed like to me. And it was just like... And then he died. I was like, well, yeah, if you're going to be a fucking idiot and stand there for 5 minutes.
7 years.
Yeah.
Because that's when Tars is carrying Anne Hathaway over. And it's like, he let her go first, but it's like, it would have not wasted anyone's time if you had gotten in right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it was one thing I was talking with Katie on the way back, and you were talking to me, is, you know, I agree, like, there are some parts of the film that I didn't like or I didn't think worked. And, you know, one thing we were talking about was, like, it still, in many respects, it followed several science fiction conventions. Like, one of the things is, first mission out, someone's got to die. It was just like, you know, when they were down there, like, that guy's
well, that was my point. Like, it seemed very forced, like...
Yeah, and you know the other thing, then you know, then that death sort of had to cling on to Anne Hathaway for a little bit. It's like, yeah, it's your fault that he died.
It is something you see in a lot of space sci-fi where you have a like an ensemble cast, and then like people just start getting picked off like left and right,
which is fine.
I don't think that she cared about that he died. She was much more upset about them losing time on Earth.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I don't think any of them really reacted.
Well,
because
she still cared about.
Well, there was a little yelling match. Right when they were waiting for the water to get out of the ship.
Did
that was more about time, though. because they had to wait for the engine to.
Well, no, but there were some direct quotes about him talking about him, the fact that she did that killed him.
I guess.
Yeah. So there was some direct moments about that.
Yeah, he said that.
Did anybody else find the movie predictable in a little bit? Because the ghost thing.
Yeah, the ghost thing.
I could tell that. Well, it
threw me off because when they first say they, I was like, okay, there's probably some time stuff and like it's probably them. And then when he went into that room, like that third dimensional room in the fifth room, I was like,
it was a three dimensional representation of five dimensional space. So it's like they created that for, and by they, humans did in the future at some point.
But when they did that, I was like, really, it is aliens? Like that seems stupid. And then he's like, oh, we did it just for even further along. I was like, okay, I guess.
I love the way that they like weaved it. It looked like a big like tapestry. The way they weaved time together in that space.
The visual was amazing.
Well, it's a tesseract. So if you understand, four dimensional cube. I thought it was cool. No.
spot that I had trouble with was the 10 minutes of suspenseful music before Matt Damon pushes.
That build up was
like, you knew it was coming, and it's like, God, just get over with it.
Yeah, like the build was for I think it was like 10 minutes.
If anyone has fast forwarded, skip another 5 minutes because we're talking. just accept that we're going to be talking about spoilers for a little longer. Okay, so, but yeah, like, yeah, the music was like, all right. And his whole monologue where he's like, yeah, human contact, survival instincts. Humans will do anything to survive.
The last thing you'll see is your daughter.
I'll do anything to survive. When you die, you're going to see. It's like, what the fuck is he talking about? Yeah, obviously he's up to no good. Yeah.
Oh, let's walk to this ledge that we have no idea where we're going.
And one of the great cuts I loved in it is when he's attempting to dock to the Endurance, and he's about to go what everyone would think is a monologue about why he's doing is the right thing and whatnot.
Yeah.
And then.
Yeah. He's like, so high. This isn't for my survival. This is for the human race. Listen, okay.
Sometimes
there's a moment when,
and then just gone. Just
I
dead.
Will say that scene when you like transition outside and it just gets silent, like that's so intense. Silence is hard to handle in movie theaters.
That was my favorite scene.
Yeah those few moments where it just cut all sound.
I was thinking about where they actually recorded that sound because you'd have to record that feeling, immense. Nothing.
What they might have done is here in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Because in Minnesota, we have the quietest room in the world.
Yeah.
We have two of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of the time dilation that they experienced?
So, with that, go ahead. I talk too much.
No, it's okay. I was just going to say, so the time is from the gravity from the giant
black hole
that's right next to everything. That is the most accurate picture of what a black hole looks like. They made it for the movie in conjunction with
Kip Thorne.
Astronomers that were on the project. And so, like, that's actually the most accurate representation of what a black hole could look like.
And also, because they had to do this, they actually made some new discoveries and breakthroughs in how, because no one had ever had to visualize a black hole in this manner before, if you will, in a cinematic visual way. So they actually made some new discoveries, and I think they were actually pointed onto some new paths about the research of black holes because they had to do that. Mm-hmm. And so my two questions, and Grant, I'm not an astrophysicist. I don't know a lot about how... I understand the principles of black holes and whatnot, but my two issues with that are, one, could there be planets in apparently a stable orbit around a black hole? Can they be? Because to me, that'd be incredibly far.
The whole universe is in a stable orbit.
But like, it seems weird for a planet to be able to be that close and not be sucked in.
I think they made it seem a lot closer than it actually was.
Okay.
Yeah. So the thing I had with the planet and the time dilation was, it seemed to me way too convenient that the edge of all the of all apparent time dilation effects was like right at the threshold of that planet, like it happened to cut off exactly right there. Like for me, it seems like, with understanding gravity, like there would be a larger roll off, if you will. Well, but it happened to sort of end right with that planet.
In the picture, though, they're not the ship isn't hovering over the planet.
For the Endurance to be close enough for the Ranger to have enough fuel to get down to the planet and back would have to be considerably closer, I think, than what a range of that, the effects of that would be.
Yeah.
It seems like even where the Endurance would be waiting, I would think that there would be some kind of effects even on them, even if it's not as, maybe it's not a year to an hour, maybe it's then, I don't know.
They actually did mention that was less of a factor. They were at the very edge of it, but there was still an effect for the Endurance.
Is it because it was a... I forgot what they called it, like an old black hole.
Yeah.
So it had less of a
gentle one.
Gentle black hole. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That could be reason for
but
it.
Like,
so I just feel like the roll off movie, was too short.
Movie physics.
I guess what I'm wondering what your guys' reaction was is more of like an emotional basis when they screwed up and had to stay like an extra 45 minutes or an hour and went back to the endurance. And they get back and 23 years have gone by. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like,
that'd be think about time.
It was a roller coaster.
In that,
yeah. Especially when he came back and all his ancestors are there.
Okay, Sean, like if something goes wrong, you can say like,
I don't know what caused that.
Okay.
It was an electrical movement of somebody's cable. Okay. That's what it was. Keep going on the part with the years.
Yeah, so when he came back and his daughter's family is there. I thought it was very...
His son's family. I mean, in the video?
Or I guess... Well, you don't know if she got married.
I thought you were talking to the son's videos.
Yeah, when he gets back and it's like the whole family's there and they don't really pay attention to him because he's never had any contact with them.
Yeah.
So it's like, even though they're blood, like when you think about it, like he's a nobody to them.
Okay, so now it's been 5 more minutes, but let's just say we'll probably talk till maybe the end of the episode because that's the last thing we have.
I thought that's what we were doing.
Okay, anyone who's now jumped back in, thank you very much for listening. Go and see Interstellar and then you can rewatch this conversation and
watch. We'll... Who's watching this?
Oh, on YouTube. You could watch this single screen.
The Vargo button.
Yeah, the Vargo. So thank you for listening.
No, that's a great point though.
I think if anything, this, so in other movies, I think like in Gravity, the movie Gravity, you get the idea to be afraid of space, of like the vacuum of space, the lack of air and everything. But I think what Interstellar made me scared of is just time passing and how like in the future, inevitably humanity will probably be an interstellar race. And so we're going to actually get into problems like this, like where I'm going to be traveling.
Well, cause it was
maybe.
All about like,
it depends.
It was all about like the human race, like basically suffocating to death and them fighting against like him and Hathaway fighting against that because they really didn't want Plan B. So,
yeah.
But it's just like that moment where he's like, she's like, I thought I had a great ending where he's just like, you know, go have your life now. Like I have my family, and he just like backs away and they all just like kind of
close in around
her. That was great.
Yeah. One thing that I think would be really tough is to be whichever one of the astronauts had stayed in the Endurance when they went down to the tidal wave planet. You know, that the idea of having, even if he did some, he said he did some stints in cryostasis, the idea of being, you know, well, he has a robot there to talk to, but you learn for 23 years and, you know, the idea of like, I don't even know if they're okay because they're experiencing time so much slower than I am.
Yeah.
That kind of waiting would be crazy. You know, the same kind of thing that they would have experienced on Earth with this crew being gone now and having no way of communicating back to them. And that's the other thing I wondered. Wonder why they couldn't get the communication back through the wormhole, because they had been getting communication through the wormhole. So why didn't suddenly stop for the Endurance?
Binary.
Yeah, but even so, they were getting something. Yeah. But now it's like it all stopped, but just for the Endurance. Like now nothing was getting backwards again.
I don't know.
Back to that character that you talked about that was on as they went down to the water planet. I felt he played that role very well. My heart ached for him when they opened up that hatch and he said, you know, you've been gone for 23 years.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. I was like, oh, man.
But at the same time, I really liked his character because he's always just so calm and just
Yep.
It's been about 23 years, 6 days, 9 minutes. He said about, and they had a very specific
Well, line. No, that was the robot had said that line.
Oh, okay.
That was another thing because the robot voices were so human. I had a hard time distinguishing. Yeah. Like, was that a human character that just spoke, or was that the robot?
I was just identifying by the voices. So
but like sometimes, like I don't know, they seemed a little similar voice.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Obviously, going back to the robot, I think that's one of my favorite iterations of sci-fi robots because it's just so unique and interesting.
Yeah.
And just because initially I was just like, when he's, I don't know if it's the same one, maybe it's different. Who's interrogating him?
Yeah, that was the same one.
When I first saw that, I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, this is what really?
The first one was Taurus.
And it was also the other thing I would have been really curious because it was mentioned that that was a Marine. So that was sort of replaced human soldiers. Yeah, so I'd be curious what they were like in the field. And I'm also curious to see if, you know, next year's Comic-Con, if we're going to see some Kace and Tars cosplayers.
But it's great. I mean, they're just so awesome and versatile and cool. And, like, he grabbed a joystick at one point. He's, like, operating the joystick. And it's like, wow.
Yeah, he was like a Swiss Army knife.
He was. Yeah. He really was.
His jokes were, like,
wonderful.
I couldn't really hear the airlock one, but I thought that was awesome. Oh, like, he's just like, put you in an airlock
and blow you up. I would never leave you behind.
Yeah, he's like, doctor. He's like, oh, this has been great for my human slave army.
Yeah. Or like, he's like,
let's dial that back.
He's like, human 75 or humor 75%, and what did he say? He was like, self destruct initiated. Yeah. Let's dial it back to 60. Knock knock. You want 55?
a powerful moment for me. Which I in hindsight, I think I saw coming a little bit, but in the theater, I don't think it did. The betrayal moment with Michael Caine when he's dying and he's making that admitting that all of this stuff, like the past, like, you know, like 15 years or probably about the past 10, 15 years have all been a sham just for Plan B. Like, so all the other effort that they've been putting into it really doesn't matter.
But I'm wondering,
for the human crew.
I'm wondering, like, why he went through with trying to solve that equation if he knew it couldn't work.
Putting on a show just because people wouldn't want to do this mission if it knew it meant completely abandoning Earth.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. The majority of people wouldn't want
to. The Matt Damon character said that.
Yeah.
That line.
So
why did Matt Damon betray everybody? I got confused.
Because of his information was fake. So that planet they were on was completely unusable.
That makes sense. He's basically gone insane and wants to survive.
Yep. So now he wants to get to a different planet.
I think a good line was, I forgot what he said, but basically no one besides him was ready to make the ultimate sacrifice of sacrificing the human race of whoever is still alive today. Like, no one else was prepared to do that except him.
Because they all had emotional attachments.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
But and like Matt Damon, it was just so interesting because he said, like, I resisted so long, and then he finally pushed that button in with the hopes that someone would come pick him up.
Yep.
It was powerful stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's tough because, like, Anne Hathaway had a really great line early on about evil and how space isn't evil. It's only, like, what you bring with you or something like that. And kind of, like, having that, like, conflict between Matt Damon is really interesting, and, like, seeing how the isolation wore down on his psyche and finally just, like, brought out this, like, I guess he would call it survival instinct. And he had such a weird way of dealing with Cooper when he was killing him. He's, like, trying to comfort him, but also, like, trying to kill him.
Seeing your children as you die.
Yeah, I don't know.
It was creepy.
It was very creepy. And then what do you guys think of when he goes into the black hole? Because I to me, that...
2001.
Very, like, 2001.
I was ready for it to cut back to Anne Hathaway at any moment. And then it just kept going with him.
But to me, it's far more interesting to find out what happens when you go into a black hole.
Sure.
Yeah. Theoretically, anyway.
Like, it was just, it's just so cool because obviously Christopher Nolan in this film has put a lot of emphasis on just the immense, I don't know, grandiose power of space and these big heavenly bodies, and, like, plunging into the black hole, everything goes black, and then just shit gets crazy. Yeah, I thought that was awesome.
And of course, there's one thing I do know that is that's not how it would happen. Well, of course, they're in the world where, like, the future humans were able to basically protect him. Because what would actually happen, it would be spaghettification, I think is what they call it. So they basically, he would have been stretched.
He would have torn apart. And, all the way around.
Yep, and eventually gotten into the event.
Atoms.
Right? Yeah, he would have died really bad.
Yes.
That's why I liked, like, the movie took over.
Exactly.
You don't actually know.
Right, and that's the point. Like, yes, we think that's what would happen, but maybe in some other perceptible reality, something else would happen. You know, it's just physics break down in a black hole, so you don't really know exactly what is happening.
Which is why it was so important that he got that information.
Well, and it is possible that, like, from an outside view, you would see him stretch, but he still felt like he was solid piece.
This is true.
I don't know. It's we're getting into really thick sci-fi, but...
Yeah, and I think even a bit beyond much of our expertise as well. Now getting into theoretical physics. I've been, I've been wanting to... get, like, to read A Brief History of Time and read all that, especially with the theory of everything coming out. Mm-hmm. So I guess
overall, really awesome movie for me. I'll have to see it again for sure.
Yeah, I'm gonna see it again in 70mm. I'm probably gonna go and talk to the projectionist again too.
We'll be shooting Down Under Heaven. We'll be keeping our ear to the ground with more movie and game stuff. And
yep, so next time we talk, we will since we'll be filming the first weekend and December. We'll see where the podcast lands, if we'll be on just on the other side
right
of principal or just before we wrap it. So thank you everyone for watching, and this is the IsCast number 23 signing off.